Stand by. Your Steve Jones Show audio is loading now. SteveJonesShow.com podcasts are sponsored by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today is Friday. That means Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Great to be with you today. And, of course, if you want the best in snacks, soft drinks, fresh hot roasted peanuts, and the best in domestics, imports, microbrews, stock up for the weekend. And the weather this weekend looks to be spectacular. Stock up for the weekend right now at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And, of course, we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Now, all we have to do, just take out the echo, and we're going to be just fine. There we go.
Happy to help.
Hey, I ran your Chase Utley thing by some friends today.
You know what? Your friends and my friends don't always agree, so I'm sure they took your side.
It elicited laughter.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. I'm sure it did. Well, seeing as you're talking a little baseball, today is the 75th anniversary of Little League Baseball, and joining us, Director of Media Relations Brian McClintock on the line to tell us a little bit more about Little League Baseball and how it's grown from that one game 75 years ago.
I mean, not even Brian would vote for Chase Utley. Brian's
You don't have to answer that, Brian. You just don't have to answer that.
Chase Utley is one of our proud Little League graduates, one of the many, so...
Yes, and a really, really good ball player.
Yeah, indeed he is.
Really good. Okay. So, Brian, it starts 75 years ago today. The field, I think, if I recall correctly, the field's across the street from where Bowman is now, right?
Actually, the very, very first game was played pretty much right behind the outfield fence of Bowman Field at a place called Point Park. And it's kind of it's a parking lot now, and it was pretty much a parking lot then too. But it was a green space where Carl Stotts was able to make a miniature baseball field and really find the dimensions that worked best for a bunch of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-olds to get out there and play baseball on a size field for them with equipment that was for them and really organized the game for youth sports.
The dimensions. Now, obviously, you look at the dimensions of a Major League Baseball diamond, which is the same that 13-year-old pluses will play on, 90 feet, 60 feet, 6 inches, and so forth. How did he come up with the numbers that we see today, 60 feet, 46 feet for a pitcher's mound? How did he come up with that?
Well, he basically, you know, he spent the summer of 1938 kind of playing around with the idea. So he would go out and he would test some things and check it out. But basically what he thought of was two-thirds of the size of a major league field. So that was sort of the mathematical equation that he had in his head. And actually, you know, the base paths have never changed. That's always been the same for the Little League division. That's what Carl first put out. And then actually the pitching distance that first year was 38 feet, which was pretty close. And over time that got moved back to 40 and then to 46.
Amazing. All right, so from there, then it grew. Where did it get to the point where they said, okay, we're doing this nice little thing with Little League here. Now Carl wants to expand it, and let's include some others in it. When did that then start to kick in?
You know, even after the first season, you know, it started to grow. It really started locally here in the Williamsport area and really, you know, started to slowly grow. But what was really, you know, a couple of things happened that really sort of kicked it off, and that was there was an article in the Saturday Evening Post in the late 1940s, and then also at the end of World War II. which, you know, we celebrate a big anniversary with that today, with the 70th anniversary of D-Day. But with the end of World War II, you know, you had fathers coming back home and looking to reconnect with their children. And, you know, the media started coming out in the late 40s, and that's really when Little League started to boom and expand throughout the United States and around the world. Our first international teams were founded in 1951.
Which is amazing. Now, last year you had a Little League World Series that included Australia for the first time. When you look at the roots of this and to see it 75 years later, what runs through your mind, Brian?
Well, you know, I think what runs through my mind is that no matter what, Little League's about the community. You know, it's about parents and neighbors coming together to support the children and give them a healthy opportunity to compete and learn life lessons like teamwork and dedication and overcoming obstacles, but working with others. And I think that's what it is. It doesn't matter whether you're in Australia or in Sunbury or in Williamsport or in Tokyo. And it doesn't matter if it was 75 years ago or today. Those are the important lessons that Little League teaches and that we strive to teach. And we're really just a place where communities can come together to support our youth.
We see what it's like today, and the number of volunteers, by the way, that's needed to put on a Little League World Series. What was it like 60 to 75 years ago in terms of what was needed to put on a Little League celebration, World Series, whatever you want to call it back then?
Well, I mean, it was much smaller when, you know, we had the first one, the first Little League World Series 68 years ago. This year will be our 68th Little League Baseball World Series. You know, it was a lot smaller. You only had, you know, four teams. It was a little tournament. You know, there was, and they were largely local, you know, and as that grew and expanded, you know, it's always been volunteers. You know, it's always been the community, even those early days and to today. You know, it's always the people who are excited about giving that opportunity to the, you know, the boys and girls in the neighborhood to compete, you know, at a level. So it's always been about the volunteers. Obviously, it's grown and expanded. You know, we 2001 we expanded to 16 teams here at the Little League Baseball World Series. You know, we're playing baseball for 10 days as opposed to two. So it's definitely a big undertaking that's grown and grown and grown. But every year you look at those kids and it's the same thing. A 12-year-old is a 12-year-old, no matter when or where it is.
I'm seeing today, and this is on a different topic, but we're still talking about youth. Michigan football season tickets for students right now down 38%. In fact, if you're looking at those sitting in the stands, Michigan last year at 27% no-shows, Georgia 28% no-shows. This among 18 to 22-year-olds. What is Little League participation like now? Is it up, down, or the same as compared to 10, 20, and 30 years ago?
You know, it's up compared to 30 years ago. You know, we really had the height of participation in the mid-90s. And, you know, the past 5 years, we've been pretty steady. You know, we have 2.4 million boys and girls playing Little League around the world. And those numbers have been pretty steady here for the past 5 years.
How do you feel about the coverage that you get? I mean, what is ESPN expanding to the regionals? What has that meant to the Little League World Series and the growth of it?
Well, it's wonderful. You know, it really, our partnership with ESPN really allows us to tell the story of Little League like none other. You know, we can show those great moments and the hard work that these kids pour into their Little League seasons and the dedication of their coaches and their volunteers and parents. And, you know, going to the regions is really exciting. It allows more people to have that, you know, chance to be on television, which is, you know, no other youth sport can really say that they have that opportunity. So, you know, it's been a great, amazing partnership. You know, we're excited to work with ESPN, and they're a wonderful partner.
I'll tell you right now, I think it's the best thing that they do. How they cover it, how positive they are. There's never a negative word ever about what goes on. I think it's the best thing they do, Brian.
Well, and you know, if you talk to them, it's the favorite. It's their favorite thing. You know, people. It's you know, you think that they might be hyperbole, but it really is not. They try. Everybody tries to work on the Little League games. You know, it's really a coveted assignment at ESPN. And you know, I think that really just it really goes back to what a great company they are, and really it shows how awesome our events are.
Yeah, and it really does. For you, with the expanded field, two ballparks, Hey, tell us about the challenges that you have today that may not have been present maybe 15, 20 years ago. Doesn't mean it's difficult, but still it's a challenge. So tell us about those challenges.
Well, I think it's really, you know, making sure that everybody can come together and know that these games here at the World Series are sort of the end of a long season, that these are just sort of almost they become symbolic of the regular season games. And, you know, a lot of attention is poured onto the Little League Baseball World Series, but, you know, we like to say that it's just such a small part of the Little League season. And, you know, the biggest challenge is really communicating that Little League is so much more than the Little League Baseball World Series. That's what everybody sees and watches, but, you know, all nine of our World Series events are televised now. You know, we have opportunities for players ages 4 to 18. Our Challenger division gives people with developmental and physical challenges an opportunity to play baseball. So Little League is just so much more than the Little League Baseball World Series. That's certainly a fun, exciting event, but it's really just the tip of the iceberg.
I want to ask you about the Challenger Series, and I meant to ask about that a little bit earlier, because what happens is that Little League players themselves get directly involved in helping in the Challenger Series. What has that meant, in your opinion, just as just for a kid, for a volunteer, and also for the actual players themselves when you went to the Challenger division?
You know, I'll speak from personal experience. When I was a little leaguer, you know, the Challenger division was really new, and you know, I played here in the outside of Williamsport, and we had a Challenger division, and you got to really experience what it was like for these children to really, you know, overcome their challenges to play the game of baseball, something that, you know, I might have taken for granted when I was a 12, 13-year-old kid. So it really gives not only the players a great perspective on what, you know, these people do, but it also creates friendships and camaraderie for when you're at school and you start seeing those buddies that, you know, you might have helped that weekend before and really see them in the hallway. You know, that's really the great takeaway from it. You know, the smiles on the Challengers kids' face when they get their hits and run around the bases. If you've never seen a Challenger game, you are absolutely missing out on some of the most entertaining baseball in the world. It is better than the All-Star game. It is better than the Home Run Derby. It's mm-hmm. two innings of absolute pure enjoyment and what the sport of baseball really means.
Yeah, and I agree with that. As somebody who's participated and helping out with it, it really is very special. What you do is special. Well, the Williamsport people do every year is special. And you know, one thing I see is I feel like it's sport at its purest level, and I appreciate the time you gave us today, Brian.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us, and you know, certainly wish Little League a happy anniversary, and you know, we're happy to have everybody join in our celebration.
75 years ago today. Brian, thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, guys.
All right. 75 years ago today, the first Little League game took place in Williamsport. I don't think you can put a premium on what it's meant to youth development. I don't think you can put a price on what it's meant to people in the area. I think anybody who has gone out and has been a part of the Little League experience, I think for the most part, nothing's ever perfect, but I think that people have been enriched by it. So I think it's a tremendous experience. You know, I coached for 14 years badly.
I know that feeling.
but I enjoyed it. And you know, part of the reason I coach, quote, and I should say that some years we had good years, some years it didn't. I mean, whatever. But yeah, I tried to play everybody as much as possible. No, you manage to win in terms of strategy. You don't manage to win in terms of personnel. That's how I always approached it. Strategically, you're always managing to win, okay? But player-wise, I never managed to win by keeping best players out there for every single inning. I couldn't do that because I think the worst thing you can do is have a kid sit on the bench. I mean, what good are you doing them at that point? What, so your record looks good? Who the hell cares about my record? All right, Tony DeFazio, Pittsburgh Sports Report, coming up next half hour to talk about the Penguins' new general manager, Jimmy Rutherford. Plus, we'll talk a little bit about the Steelers and Dick Girardi in the 4 o'clock hour on the Belmont Stakes. Kevin will have pen out, ready to go, looking for the exacta. We wanna see you in a key.
June has always been one of the best months to buy a new Kia from Sunbury Motors Kia.
Why?
Just listen. Sunbury Motors has 15 2014 Souls in stock
starting under 15 grand.
There's 26 2015 Kia Sorentos in stock, and we're already discounting them up to $4,000. 2015 Sorentos start at $22,913. You want real luxury? We got it with the 2014 International Car of the Year, the Kia Cadenza. Sunbury Motors Kia is discounting all Cadenzas
$6,000.
Remember, all new Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty. Sunbury Motors Kia has 84 new Kias to choose from. Where else would you buy your next new vehicle than Sunbury Motors? On the Strip in Hummel's Wharf, satisfying more customers, selling more cars. A tradition of trust since 1915.
Tax extra, all applicable Kia customer rebates apply. KMF bonus cash financing to well-qualified customers.
The best get-togethers start with a trip to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury. Why? Because Brewers Outlet has not only a great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, but also a lot more. Brewers Outlet has water, soda, they roast their peanuts every day, and you can't forget about stopping by the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and all your favorite snacks. Before you enjoy those special times with family and friends, make your visit first to the beverage supermarket, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Hey, they just chuckled. It wasn't out loud laughing.
What?
About your opinion about who should be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it was out loud laughing. Like belly laughter.
Last night I saw a special on Jim Brown, and they were talking about Jim Brown averaged 103 yards a game, 104 yards a game, how he averaged 5.2 yards a carry.
Yes.
Thought, wow, that's 1.3 yards more per carry than your guy.
Yeah, there you go.
Like every three carries, he gains four more yards. Wow. That's kind of a gap, don't you think?
No, I don't think so.
That's a huge gap. I mean, so no, you're okay getting 3 yards every time the ball's touched.
Well, yeah, I'm fine with that. I mean, I 3 yards on average every time you touch the football. I mean, that you're looking at a 3.4, or is it? Wait, I'm sorry, 3.9 yards a carry. So
yeah,
you're looking at a first down every three carries.
Really?
Yeah, you know, 4 plus 4 is 8, and then third down, first you get a first down.
Yeah, yeah, that's terrific. Then why didn't they give him the ball every time?
Well, because he had asthma.
LeBron James last night cramped up badly, and it has been almost comical in some ways watching him being defended. Like, ESPN's, like, taking it as an affront to them. And they get angry about, you know, like, they're defending him. Why does he need to be defended? He doesn't need to be defended. Anybody who's ever had... Look, okay, I just bashed my head.
You have a real good bad experience, okay. Rather, with a leg cramps.
All right. Okay, about a month ago. I mean, and I bashed it, but good. Right, I got 6 stitches in my forehead because I got a bad leg cramp in the middle of the night, got up, stumbled, whatever, and went right into a wall into a picture frame. Blood everywhere. I mean, it was kind of a gory scene. That's fine. You know, got it all stitched up. Now we're better than ever. But you can't play through it. It happens. It's hereditary. You can't just drink water. I mean, it's just, no simple solutions. You know, I try to eat bananas every night for potassium and so forth because it's something I've had a chronic problem with. The worst one ever, without a doubt in my mind, I remember like it was yesterday. It was in the middle of the night when I was in College Station, Texas. I was doing a basketball game at Texas A&M. And it was so bad and was so painful that it hurt me for 3 weeks. It just happens. But it's almost like you listen to the ESPN people, and they're like, they feel like they're being attacked for defending him, But there's no need to defend him. LeBron James didn't do anything wrong last night. When you're like that, you can't move. You can't play. You can't fight through it. It's as simple as that. But what's made it worse is that these guys seem like the network's being attacked for defending him. Don't pay attention to Twitter. When's the last time you ever saw something positive on Twitter when it comes to opinions?
I was going to say, I post positive stuff on Twitter. Not opinions, though.
I was going to say, because, I mean, your negativity is almost depressing. Kevin was talking before about playing Little League. He makes all the players call him sir. Yeah, that's kind of a, you know.
Yeah, let me tell you something. One of the best things about Little League is when a kid that's played for you and then goes on to something else comes back and you happen to see him at a game with one of his younger brothers or something. He said, you know what? I had so much fun playing baseball. That's what makes it worthwhile right there.
Absolutely, yeah. And because he ended up with other parents coaching him along the way. So... a well-rounded experience.
Thanks.
What? Yeah, I'm sure other kids love playing for you. It's just your kid that's struggling.
That's correct. That is the true story right there.
What did I do wrong, Dad? What did I do wrong? All right. Tony DeFazio's Pittsburgh Sports Report. I think he'd call me sir.
Steve, I had Davey Lopes just two summers ago get really angry with me for calling him coach outside the clubhouse. It was one of those things where I thought he was kind of laughing, but it lingered for a couple of minutes during our conversation before he finally got over it.
Wow. How about that? Yeah, it's interesting because he's one of those guys. I just talked about him the other day. And people were throwing out different names about Hall of Fame consideration, because this goes to the Mike Schmidt comment that at least in terms of conversation, Jimmy Rollins should be a conversation, yay or nay, about him. How about, you know? And, you know, when you start thinking about different guys over their careers, Garvey, Lopes, Russell, Say. Well, that was the infield. Well, how many of those guys were in the Hall of Fame, Tony?
Yeah, I'm guessing none of them are in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
I don't even know who would be. I don't know, you know, would Garvey be the top vote getter amongst those guys? I don't know.
Yeah,
they had some great years too, but
he would.
You know, Steve, as you were naming those guys, if there were such thing as a Hall of Fame infield or a Hall of Fame outfield or whatever, that would be a Hall of Fame infield.
Right, and that's and you look at, for example, we were talking about Chase Utley and Jimmy Rollins, and I said, you know who they remind me of? They remind me of Lou Whitaker and Alan Trammell, and neither one of them is in the Hall of Fame. Just real.
That seems like more of a crime to me than maybe it's because I'm a little bit younger. But one was the 70s, one was the 80s. But boy, oh boy, those two guys. We'll never see that again, right? We'll never see another shortstop and second baseman turning double plays for that many years in a row with the same team.
And they came up in Double A together. They actually went through the latter stages of the minors together into the majors. I mean, that's how long they were together, and they're not in the Hall of Fame. So. You know, I mean, look, there's Hall of Fame level, there's really, really good, and then there's okay. All right? Well, those guys were in the really, really good category. Jim Rutherford, as someone very familiar with the Connecticut scene, he was the GM of the Whalers. He's the guy Peter Carmano sent out to say, hey, we're going to Raleigh. But he's a really good, solid, savvy, experienced GM. I think the Penguins, what do you think about the guy they found?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've been somewhat surprised by by a lot of negative reaction on Twitter by fans, and I guess that again shows you that you can't necessarily get the true heartbeat of the entire fan base by some of the social media comments. But I agree with you. I mean, this is a guy who, went to two Stanley Cup finals, won a cup, was twice the executive of the year in the NHL, so he certainly has a pretty good-looking resume. Now, his last 5 years have not been very good, but that's a whole different job he was doing in Carolina than the job he'll be doing in Pittsburgh. That was a really cash-strapped organization, an organization that really didn't have any room to make very many moves at all. And I think it probably makes sense that they struggled. I think it would have taken a miracle almost to get them in the playoffs over the past couple of years.
Right.
You know, so, yeah, I think it's a good, solid hire. He said he's probably only going to be here for 2-3 years. Those words came out of his mouth today at the press conference, and he really acknowledged that there are a couple of really good young, you know, future GMs in the organization that he'll be mentoring and working with. So it's a different type of an approach, but I think he's good for the right now. And sometimes you make moves for the right now, and the Penguins are doing that also at the same time with an eye on the future. That you know, trying to do two things at once doesn't always work out, but all we can do is sit back and watch, and his first move will be to hire a coach, so that'll be the first time we get to, you know, throw any kind of a grade on paper for Jim Rutherford.
And the hire, but it was a different circumstance, obviously, but the hire kind of gave me a Scotty Bowman feeling, short-term, but a guy with a deep resume.
I think it's a great comparison. Yeah, I think it's a great comparison. You talk about Hall of Fame versus really, really good. And, yeah, Scotty Bowman was a Hall of Fame coach. Yeah. He is a Hall of Fame coach. And Rutherford has a really, really good resume. So the Penguins certainly could have done a lot worse. I think a lot of the things that Rutherford had to say really, you know, shows that he has in mind what the Penguins ownership talked about. He talked about, you know, people were asking him about the character and grit on the team. And his response, I thought, was pretty interesting. He talked about how character he doesn't think is an issue, but it's a quiet room. It's a lot of quiet character, and they need a room where people are not afraid to speak up, and maybe you get some people who are going to talk a little bit more in the locker room. And frankly, over the past 3 or 4 years, the Penguins lost guys like Billy Guerin, Max Talbot.
Yep.
You could even throw a Colby Armstrong, Hal Gill into that mix. Those were the vocal guys in the locker room. Sidney Crosby's never been a vocal leader. He leads by example. He leads by his hard work. And I think that was, you know, pretty indicative of what the Penguins were looking for, somebody who recognizes what the issues are. And Rutherford, having only been here for, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes, put his finger on a lot of what the Penguins ownership talked about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, interesting. He was a shake-em-up kind of guy, I know, when he went to Hartford/Carolina. That's how he approached things. He shook things up himself. At least for Dan Bylsma, his long national nightmare is over, at least. I mean, he's now free to go out and negotiate with somebody because, I mean, that guy twisted in the wind for weeks.
Yeah, he did, and that was the unfortunate thing that came out of this. I don't, you know, I think it ended in time for it not to be, not to damage Bylsma's career. Had it gone on much longer, had it gone on past the Stanley Cup Finals, I think that would have been embarrassing for the Penguins. So I think this was a move that was done, you know, at least salvaging some of Bylsma's chances out there. And you know what? He will get a job. He'll get one quickly. Jim Rutherford acknowledged that. And if he learns from what he did here in Pittsburgh, if he learns from what went wrong and what went right and why, there's no reason to think Dan Bylsma can't you know, be trying to put some more hardware on a shelf very soon.
How serious was the Pierre McGuire talk?
Boy, that's a great question. You know, he acknowledged he almost had no choice when he got barraged with questions at the Stanley Cup Final. He acknowledged that he did meet with the Penguins. He never said interviewed for the job. He just said meet with. And again, I don't know whether there's anything to read into with those comments or not. But, you know, if you do connect some dots, he does have a relationship with Mario Lemieux. At the very least, they golf together and have golfed together often in the past, so that might or might not be something. But it seems like he was one of several people that were contacted and at least discussed the position. So it's just funny because so many Penguins fans were up in arms about, oh my gosh, don't you dare hire Pierre McGuire. And then those are the same fans who talked about how terrible of a hiring the Jim Rutherford hire is. So, you know, you can, I guess on Twitter, that old saying is not true. You can't please anybody any of the time.
Have you ever seen any positive comments on Twitter?
Not a lot, Steve. There are not a lot. I guess that's just the way it goes right now, right? Everybody's a critic, and that's the easiest way to be one is to be anonymous and do so in just a few words.
The Pirates. There is a rather scathing article about the Pirates and their management written in the Triangle about how not they didn't spend money and this is what you get when you don't spend money. I don't know if you had a chance to read that at all, but they're playing better. What are you seeing?
Well, you know, I didn't see that. I've seen certainly criticisms, you know, similar to what you're saying right now, and I certainly will check that out after we get off the line here. But there's a degree, maybe a larger degree of legitimacy to that criticism, certainly. There's also a little bit of legitimacy to the idea that that's what they're operating with, and their hands are strapped. You know, they are operating with one hand behind their back in some cases. Could they do things better, even though that's the case? I think that's a legitimate criticism. And I think, unfortunately for him, Gregory Polanco is the guy who's being victimized the most by this right now. Yeah. His play deserves to be at a major league level, and they're just letting him twist. You talk about twisting in the wind, that's what he's doing right now. And to his credit, he's still continuing to produce. The team is playing better. The starting pitching is better. I mean, when the starting pitching is better, they're lasting deeper into games. The bullpen is then more effective. That's been one of the major issues. Russell Martin is healthy again. I think that has certainly helped the lineup. It's June, and in June is when Pedro Alvarez usually heats up. We're seeing that happen a little bit now. And they're getting great play, and I don't want to dismiss this at all, by Josh Harrison. I mean, yeah. He has played great in the leadoff spot. They can play him at third base. They gave Neil Walker a night off the other night and put Harrison at second. And he's been really, really good in right field. His resume, Steve, suggests that that's not going to last very long. He's a solid player. He's better off the bench. Hard to believe he's going to turn into a great starter overnight. But I think you're seeing what he's capable of when he's on his game, and that's the case right now. The longer he plays well, the more time they might take with Gregory Polanco. It's hard to even utter the statement that Josh Harrison is keeping Gregory Polanco in the minor leagues. Right. But at least for the short term, that may somewhat be the case.
Yeah. The point that was being made in the article, and when you get a chance to read it, was the Pirates, for example, I think offered A.J. Burnett $12 million. And it was Jonah Carey, by the way, that wrote the article. And that, you know, he didn't take it. And they could have tendered him at 14, I guess, if they wanted to.
Right.
But he didn't take it. Well, their question was, okay, well, what'd you do with the $12 million? that was basically the question.
And maybe that went into the long-term offer that they put in front of Gregory Polanco, one that he turned down, which is probably a smart move on his part. He would be in the major leagues now, and he accepted that, but he'd be playing for a reduced rate in the long term. The Burnett thing, it really, to me, Steve, there's no way to say other than that was mishandled. An extra $2 million, and even if he did turn it down, they'd get a draft pick. And if he accepts it, I mean, you know, it's $2 million. In the grand scheme of things, for a major league team, that's nothing. In fact, they're going to end up paying a big chunk of that to Travis Snyder to not play for them whenever they release him, and that's coming up as soon as they do decide to recall Polanco. So that was mishandled. I don't know if there's any other way to say that. There's no defending what they did with Burnett. And how much better would this team be right now with Burnett pitching exactly the way he is in Philly? You got to think they'd certainly be more solid. That would be another spot in the rotation.
Right. Ryan Shazier did sign his contract with the Steelers. It's one thing about the slotting. It's just easier to do.
Yep.
I mean, just getting these guys under contract and getting them to OTAs, can you put a value on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's huge. And I think another thing that kind of went under the radar was Ohio State used to run an academic system where most of these guys had to skip a lot of the OTAs because their classes hadn't graduated yet. Right. That's not the case this year. So
right. So
he was able to attend as a first-year guy. I think that does help. And, boy, it's just so much less of a headache to know there's not going to be any issues. All these guys are going to sign their contract. It's just a matter of who falls where and when. It's a whole, you know, we're usually covering so many more stories as people in the media, but this is one that really no longer requires any attention. Everyone's going to sign.
Yeah, and that's huge. And the Ohio State, for those who don't know, it used to be on the quarter system, and now they're on semesters, and that was the big change, and that's why they're able to do what Tony just talked about. Is it with the Steelers, no news, good news? Is that the bottom line?
I think so, yeah, at this point. You know, I mean, you're just hoping everybody stays healthy, and certainly in OTAs, everybody should, but with the way ACLs tear right now with no contact, that's something you're always a little bit worried about. And, yeah, I think, you know, no news is good news. They're talking about perhaps bringing back Brett Kiesel to fortify the defensive line. It seems like a small move, you know, adding a 30-something guy to that line, but it would be in a role where he'd probably be playing, you know, I don't know, 50% less snaps a game than he did last year, and can probably get a little bit more mileage out of a guy like that. So they need some experience on the defensive line. I still think, Steve, the biggest issue, and you know I've mentioned this before, I don't know what they have at cornerback. What they do have, I don't think is good enough.
And that was the number one need going in, and they didn't draft it. It really is interesting, because I don't think you can wave a magic wand and change that between now and Labor Day.
No, I don't know how you do. I mean, Ike Taylor's not going to revert back to the way he played 3 years ago. You know, can Cortez Allen get better? I think he can. He's still a young guy, and he's been on a bit of an upward curve so far, so that's probably a good sign. But, you know, aside from Allen, you know, we're talking about guys that you know what they are. You know, William Gay, if he's your dime defensive back, great. If he's your starting cornerback, because he's the best you have, you got problems, and I think that the Steelers have problems. I think that someone's probably going to challenge Ike Taylor for that starting job, but unfortunately, I think that challenge is going to come, you know, from Taylor's poor play as opposed to someone stepping up and taking it from him. So, yeah, Steve, I think that's a bad situation that will hurt this team and could hold them back, actually.
Your backpedal, by the way, if you work on that, I think you've got a shot maybe being a dime guy.
Yeah, right.
Just, I'm just trying to give you more access to the locker room, Tony. All right.
I appreciate it. Maybe I'll use it. I could use all the help I can get. I can tell you that.
All right, my friend. Have a great weekend. It's always great to hear from you. Thanks for the insight.
Thanks, Steve.
The Kevin Herr analysis, especially the last part, in a moment. Brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. It's where I stock up for the weekend. On News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, top of the hour we go. I just spent the last 3 minutes listening to a guy complain about his two corners in the NFL.
Or the lack thereof.
I mean, do you wake up bitter?
Hey, did Tony say anything opposite of me? No. He said he agrees. Not in so many words.
I know. Everybody agrees.
Just make me some money next time.